You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Kuh, and I am joined today by PitcherList writer Kyle McCarthy. Welcome to the show, Kyle. How are you doing?
Doing great. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. I know this is the first time for you on the pod, so for our listeners who aren't familiar with your work, could you just give a quick introduction? How'd you get involved in fantasy baseball? You know, what teams are you a fan of? Stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so this is my first year at PitcherList. Started writing here about a month or two ago. Been a huge fantasy fan my whole life, playing it since a while now. But huge fantasy baseball fan, started writing about fantasy probably about 6 months ago, just kind of freelance writing anywhere, and kind of just exploring all routes. And as far as, you know, team fandom, I'm a huge Washington Commanders fan. That's a little aside for football. Big DC area. I'm Orioles, kind of leading Orioles, Nationals, a little bit of both. All DC, and huge baseball fan. So
nice. Do you have a hot take about either the Nationals or the Orioles this upcoming season?
I'm little pessimistic on the Orioles right now, just because, you know, the news about Grayson Rodriguez is a little disappointing. He was supposed to, you know, take that leap forward, and, you know, it's all about health with him, really. But the Nationals look pretty exciting. I mean, with that young core of hitters, we'll see about the pitching. I'm still a little tentative to say anything. I like McKenzie Gore, but anything else is kind of out of my bounds. So.
Yeah, that young hitting crew is really nice.
Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah,
I have a couple of those guys in Dynasty. So,
I took James Wood pretty high in that TGFBI. So, I'm big on him. Yeah.
I want to be optimistic about Dylan Cruz, but I'm hoping he can just get to the 20 homer mark. If he can get to there, then I feel good about him. Mm-hmm. But if it's a 10-30 season, it's only 60% of your potential or something like that.
Yeah, so. I think the power could be there. I was actually looking at him. He kind of popped. I did a little this process plus kind of laggers.
Sure.
Yeah. And he was one that was his WRC plus was in the 70s, you know, but his process plus was pretty good. I think it was around 118 or so.
Okay.
So maybe just a little bit unlucky, but I still am a fan. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take that hope. Anyways, we're here to talk about Kyle's articles on bat speed, which is super interesting. But before we get into all of that, just a reminder, you can follow our podcast on Twitter at This Week PL. Make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We're actually also on YouTube now on the PitcherList channel. So if you prefer a video format, we don't do anything special on the video. But if you would rather watch this podcast instead of listen to it, we're also there. So wherever you listen to or watch the podcast, please leave a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Now, we're going to get into Kyle's two articles on bat speed. And so before we even talk about the articles and the players that you highlighted, bat speed data is a relatively new thing, right? I think it was just something that kind of came to us in StatCast last year, finally giving us some, insight into the mechanics of hitting. You know, we have so much data into the mechanics of pitching, but I feel like this is maybe one of the first few things that we'd be able to see from the hitter side. So just as to help us get into understanding bat speed, why is it important and what can bat speed tell us?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a fresh tool. I believe it was implemented last year in May, last season. So this first year for it. And I think it's just kind of a direct translator for, you know, the ability to hit for power, ability to hit the ball hard. I kind of compared it in the article to, velocity for pitchers, just because, you see all the top pitchers, they all have, premium velocity, inevitably leads to them, breaking, but there's no signs that bat speed points to hitters breaking yet, at least. So, I think it's useful, especially in small samples like velocity, because, pretty early on, what a pitcher's velocity is. And I think similar to bat speed, we know pretty early what their max bat speed is, what their average bat speed is, will kind of give us some signal there. And I think subtle example last year was somebody that popped, in this in these bat speed metrics, swing length metrics, was Helaet Ramos. He
Mm, yep.
popped as having somebody with, plus bat speed, believe around 74, 75 miles an hour, and then, shorter than average swing length, which is kind of the ideal combo you're looking for. And it was kind of before his little breakout in the summer. He kind of popped as he was going around the circles as somebody who had these characteristics, and he went off to have a really good season. So I think it's definitely interesting. It's in bat speed is inherently connected to contact point. So if you're pulling the ball more, you're meeting the ball out in front of the plate. So that just gives the bat more time to reach max speed, which makes sense. And in the article for the five hitters had higher pull rates in the second half, so I think it all makes sense. So
Yeah, that's really interesting. Something I didn't actually think about how where you make contact with the ball also impacts how fast the bat is going.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I remember, I think it was Kyle Bland, here at Pitchless, had tried to do some math last summer about trying to figure out like what's the acceleration of a bat, right?
Yeah,
And I
yeah,
think
yeah.
that really plays into this idea of like, yeah, you want to be able to, in a sense, pull the ball just because that is going to be the fastest point of your bat,
Yeah.
as you're going through the swing. So yeah, that's definitely something I haven't thought about, but it makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. Ideally, we get once we get further in the future with this technology, we can, regulate for a contact point. But right now, I think it's all, kind of connected a little bit.
Yeah, and I know if this was a couple years ago, there was, some article, I think it was on Fangraphs, about how exit velocity is like almost completely tied into pitching. Like there's like one thing that
Yeah,
like hitters
I've
have
seen that.
influence over exit velocity, and I guess one of that, maybe that stat is bat speed. But even the idea that like when you connect with a pitch in front of the plate, it's actually moving faster than when it crosses the plate, a couple inches later, however microscopic of a change that is. But the faster a ball is coming in, technically the higher the exit velocity you can get on that ball as well. So
For
even that
sure, yeah.
idea of like pulling the ball, like you're technically hitting the ball when it's traveling faster than if you had a little bit of a later swing, and you're hitting the ball as it crosses the plate. So anyway, some really interesting nerdy physics stuff there.
Yeah, some of it goes way beyond me, but it is interesting, yeah.
Exactly. So I think it's interesting that you relate this to pitching velocity, because the interesting thing about the two articles you wrote were about one of them was about guys who increase bat speed, and I think that's a very obvious like, oh yeah, if you swing the bat faster, you will hit the ball harder, right? Like that's very easy to understand. And then you wrote an article on bat speed reducers, or just this idea that like tinkering with bat speed, like decreasing it by, half a mile per hour can potentially find some improvement, which I think maybe runs counter to what we think about in just terms of just like, well, if you swing the bat harder, you should hit the ball harder and it should work better. But I think in terms of velocity, right, like just because a guy can throw absolute gas does not mean that they're going to be, a great pitcher, right? Velocity does not mean everything. So how can reducing bat speed improve your performance at the plate?
Definitely. So I think for one, I think what makes sense is, reducing bat speed can just improve contact ability and, bat control. That's kind of the first thing that sticks out. That's why, I think a lot of the hitters that I kind of looked at, they had higher end bat speed. They had, above average bat speed, so they had a little bit of room to maneuver, a little bit of bat speed to concede. So the slight trade-off of, conceding a little bit of bat speed, shortening up a little bit, in favor of making more contact, they can maintain majority of their quality of contact, their batted ball metrics. So I think it's a fair trade-off in a lot of cases for to just sacrifice a little bit of that bat speed in exchange for contact, because that contact is what the hit tools is what derails a lot of these guys that have that premium bat speed. These really tooled up guys, like Joe Adell, who we'll get to a little bit later. But he's definitely a prime example of somebody that could concede some bat speed to in favor of making more contact, which is just to allow the ceiling to be higher for one, and then the floor not to be totally bottomed out. So
Yeah, and as you mentioned, we'll probably talk about this in a little bit with some of the players you mentioned. But it's like if a guy has like a 90th percentile bat speed, reducing that by a little bit to just be able to control your bat a little bit better. But you know, it makes sense in terms of just like, yeah, that's going to improve probably the quality of your plate appearances. So yeah, super interesting. All right. So let's get into the players then that you highlighted in each of these articles. And we're going to start with the guys who improved their bat speed in 2024. And we're going to start with Jarren Duran, who, yeah, pretty meteoric rise last season. First full year in the majors. He did play, I think, over 100 games in 2023.
He's Iron Man.
Yeah, but yeah, finally got to a full season last year. 21 homers, 34 stolen bases, .285 average. Just like an incredible breakout season for him. How did his improvement in bat speed mirror his just general improvement throughout the season?
So I think like if you look at his shape of the season, like not a whole lot changed production wise. Like it was pretty similar. But I think his, the biggest thing that he improved throughout his career was, early on, he, I think he always had, these high max EVs, which is, kind of a proxy for bat speed. So I think that's super interesting. But the biggest thing that he raised was his ability to make contact to bring that strikeout rate down, which is what derails a lot of these guys, like we mentioned before. But yeah, he improved his contact ability, and that kind of allowed him to, tap into more of his raw power. And because his current approach is it's super effective for him, obviously, because he, .285 average, still 20 plus homers. Super fascinating combo. But he did kind of, I compared him to Julio Rodriguez just as far as, batted ball distribution. Because they're very similar as far as ground ball, fly ball, all those sorts of things. But the biggest difference is pull rate, of course. And that's, where the difference in home run totals lie. But he did, Duran did tick up that pull rate in the second half. It wasn't anything crazy, and I don't think he should, sell out to pull the ball, because I don't think that would, I think that would obviously have a negative effect on his strikeout rate, and his average just wouldn't be as high. So I think his approach does work for him, but if he can, toggle between, hitting for a higher pull, because he has flashed higher pull rates in the minor leagues. So if he can, toggle both of those approaches, I think because he has the raw power, I think he could have, just a 25 homer season at some point.
Yeah, one stat that you highlight that I wanted to zero in on a little bit more is you mentioned fast swing rate, about a pretty dramatic improvement from the first half to the second half, 27-ish percent to basically 48%. Can you explain a little bit about what fast swing rate is, and what does that tell us about Duran?
So fast swing rate is, I believe, is just the swings over 75 miles an hour is what
Okay,
it looks
yeah.
at. So that's what it looks at, and I think that kind of points to, the tinkering aspect, the ability to, or the willingness to try something different. And I think that kind of signals that, like, he was swinging a lot harder, more in the second half. So maybe he was trying to, because I mean, he did pull the ball more, so maybe he was trying to hit for more. He didn't exactly, I think he hit 10 homers in the first half, 10 homers in the second half. So not a huge difference, but his, it does show a willingness, and I think that's interesting. And it's not maybe the most ideal to pull the ball at his ballpark, just because, Fenway with the Green Monster, and it's just not the best for lefty pull power. But if he does have that in him, I do think it makes him a little more interesting. He's a great player regardless. Like, not going to change my opinion on him, but I think it makes him a little more interesting.
Yeah, it and I think looking at how he improved over the season, it feels at least a little repeatable that like it wasn't just like, oh, he had really good swings in like 1 month, right? It was like, oh, it was a consistent increase
Yeah,
over
he
the entire
wasn't
season.
streaky. Yeah, he wasn't streaky at all. He was very consistent throughout the season, so.
Yeah. All right, cool. Another name you mentioned, which is actually the last name of this article, we'll talk, maybe go back to some of these other names. But Gavin Lux, super interesting name here because it, obviously, longtime Dodgers prospect, could never seem to kind of break out though. You know, it was like, you know, this guy was consistently in the lineup, but he's like, oh, well, he's at best like the nine hitter
Yeah, kind
or.
of unwilling to trade him in any package.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like he's like a can't trade guy, and then at the end of the day, like the Dodgers send him to Cincinnati
Yeah, for
for
nothing.
pennies on the dollar, essentially. And that's kind of reflected by the fact that his current ADP right now is in the 400. So
yeah,
there's exactly. not a lot yeah. of hope behind Gavin
yeah.
Lux. And yet, I think you highlight him in this article because, hey, there was actually kind of an improvement that we saw between the first mm-hmm. and second half of the season. Yeah, so what do you think is repeatable, or maybe what happened to Gavin Lux in that second half of the season last year? And mm-hmm. what about that might be repeatable in 2025?
Yeah, so I highlighted, you know, just as how disastrous his first half was. You know, he was one of three regulars to have a slugging below 300, which is, you know, just really, really poor.
Yeah.
But kind of what the interesting part was, I highlighted a piece by Mike Petriello in that article, and he highlighted a few, you know, contact-oriented hitters that were just kind of, you know, slap hitter type, that kind of sold out, not sold out, but they like showed a increase in fast swing rate, those sort of things, increased bat speed. And Gavin Lux was on there. And that was kind of in the middle of his hot streak. I believe it was in August or something. But he obviously sustained it through, you know, the end of the season. You know, it was really a poor stretch. I'm not saying because it was around 115 WRC plus. I'm not saying he's going to do that, but his quality of contact did, you know, take a substantial jump. It was around a 10% barrel rate, 47% hard hit rate, which is easily his career bests in those areas. And that was over, I mean, that's not nothing. That was over the second half. You know, it was an inflated BABIP. So that certainly plays a role, but I mean, those are still strong numbers that, like, I don't think he'll sustain over a full season, but, if he can meet somewhere in the middle of, I believe around 6% is his career barrel rate. If he can, you know, get that up to 7 or 8 and he doesn't actually have to, even with a ballpark in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just a great, I believe it's the best ballpark for lefty power. So there's certainly, he's still young enough. He's only 27 to work, you know, he can blend together these, you know, different skill sets he's shown, because he was kind of contact oriented before this. And just kind of, he had a good walk rate. But if he can, because another thing I was looking at is interesting now, but he had a 65 grade raw power on Fangraphs, but oh, okay. he's obviously never shown that in the big leagues,
yeah.
which is interesting. But he's still young enough, and maybe he can, you know, blend together these different approaches he's shown, because the strikeout rate did tick up in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a trade off, and he'll make that trade off all day, but
right.
Over a full season, we'll see what it looks like.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that, because, I don't have his stats up right in front of me, but mm-hmm. how did that kind of, you know, improvement, so to speak, in you know, faster swing, more barrels,
mm-hmm. yeah,
you know, higher searching after high X velocities, how did that actually like impact his strikeout rates?
Yeah, so he definitely did tick up. I believe it was a 25% strikeout rate in the second half. Let me see what it was in the first half. It was 20%, which is right around his career average.
Okay.
In the first half. So he definitely changed some things, and he actually walked more in the second half. Walked more, struck out more, hit for more power. So, I mean, that's certainly a trade-off he would take.
Yeah.
But, you know, like we said, I think the BABIP was near 400, which is pretty ridiculous. But if he can, like I said, blend together, you know, a little bit of power, faster swing with his, you know, having the back pocket, his former approach of, you know, two strikes, you know, shorten up and make contact. So,
mm-hmm. yeah, I think the challenge for Lux now is figuring out where he fits in that Cincinnati's yeah. red infield, because it's just so chock full of young stars
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
You know, if he can get 500 plate appearances, I think this season,
mm-hmm. I think yeah.
that'd be great, but it's just so hard to determine how does he fit
yeah.
in that group, just because I feel like they have so many good players that it's like, as soon as someone's on a hot streak, they're in yeah. there. And if someone's on a cold streak, you're out. Like it probably is very vicious to be there.
Yeah. Cause I kind of pointed out that it seems like they were a good offense, but they were like bottom five ish in WRC plus last year as a team. I mean, anybody that's hitting, I feel like is gonna stick. And if Lux gets off to a hot start or something, then, you know, he could be in there a lot. So,
right. Yeah, I think so. Roster Resource currently has him penciled in as the starting third baseman, which okay. probably bodes well yeah. for him. I guess as a lefty, it also helps, you know, you're going to be facing more righties for sure.
Yeah, good point.
But yeah, they've got Jamer Candelario starting at first, and then Christian Encarnacion Strand on the bench right now, which, like, one of those guys goes on a hot streak, and all of a sudden maybe they're shifting players around.
Yeah, I feel like it was a lot more loaded, the Reds infield, like, a couple years ago. Like, it felt like it was – like, maybe even last year it was really crowded. But now, like India's gone, and Steer's gone to the outfield, so kind of lined up a little bit.
Yeah, we'll see if that allows Lux to get a bit more playing time. One player I did want to highlight is a guy who's technically not replacing Lux, but he's in Los Angeles now, where Lux used to be, and that's Michael Conforto. Yeah. And I think what's fascinating about this is that you look at all the names that you've got in here. It's like, it's Jaron Duran, it's Mason Wynn, Miguel Amaya, Gavin Lux, like young all guys, these young guys, and then there's this 32-year-old Michael Conforto, also somehow improving his bat speed. So, what did you see in his 2024 season? You know, what kind of hope is there for 2025 for Conforto?
Yeah, Conforto was a guy I really liked, you know, back in it, like, you know, like 7 years ago now, I guess, which is crazy. But yeah, after 30, you know, bat speed just, you know, it takes a big hit. Like, that's just an aging curve. That's just how things work. But yeah, kind of looked at me, just popped, because, you know, he had a quietly good season in 20 homers. Barrel rate was back, and it was his best since, I believe, 2019, and he hit the ball hard at about 46% rate. All really good numbers, and yeah, I looked at, you know, the bat speed, and it was, like I said, would have been a top 25 mark. His second half bat speed would have been top 25 mark of the full season. So if he can maintain, it was 73 in the first half, which is still, you know, still plus, still above average. And I kind of pointed to his max EV being about 114, which is, you know, still that's good. That's a really good max EV. Yeah. So I just think getting further removed from that shoulder surgery, which is, you know, derailed a lot of guys. I think Cody Bellinger, where his power is almost completely sapped. His raw power, at least, is way different than what it was. So it's good to see that he's feeling healthy, that he's kind of back to those good numbers. And I mean, going to the Dodgers, you know, that does not hurt at all. Going to that lineup and then just going to that, you know, that organization where they seem to make everybody better is a good thing for him.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's probably the best situation that you can get into. It's,
you can't get any better. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yes. It's going to be a long season for a lot of us. It is.
Yeah.
All right. Again, like I mentioned, there's a couple of the names in the article, Mason Wynn, Miguel Amaya, that we didn't get to, but definitely check out. The Bat Speed Risers article from Kyle, but we're going to move to the bat speed reducers, or kind of the tinkerers who, you know, kind of did some stuff with their swing.
Yeah.
And we should say, like, this, if you lose, like, probably a couple miles an hour in your bat speed, that's not a good thing. Like,
yeah. It's generally not ideal. Yeah.
Like, these reductions are, I think you have the right terms of, like, tinkering, right? Legitimate, like, small changes that result in maybe some positive impacts. And then I think you do have a really good caveat in your article that's like, they reduce their bat speed and things improve, but we're not 100% sure if, like, that's the reason why what's going on.
There's a million factors at play here. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. So you don't want to attribute all of it to, you know, bat speed. So.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyways, I think you start off the article with a really good name, because I think he's a guy that a lot of people are wondering what the heck was going on last year. And that was Matt Olson. And it was a season that, I mean, this guy was essentially, like, end of the first round. I mean, when you hit 50 homers, like, you just get that sort of helium, right? And he was just awful for probably the first 3 months. And he still managed to finish with 30 homers, which I think was, you know, impressive considering how terrible the season went.
Yeah.
What was really interesting, though, was you kind of noted there was a very distinct change in his swing speed between the first half and the second half. So what changes did you see in those mechanics that, you know, could potentially indicate how he was able to improve in the second half of the season?
Yeah, I kind of highlighted, you know, how the Braves collectively, including Matt Olson, you know, just faced a lot more fastballs. That was kind of a theme throughout last year. He was just getting, I mean, he led the league in batter run value in 2023 against fastballs. He just ate them up. He destroyed them. But whatever, for whatever reason, in 24, they just ate him up. He couldn't get to him. He was striking out at a career high rate, or close to a career high rate, 27%, not walking at all. And he just kind of, he was going through it. I mean, he had a, I believe some of it was BABIP related, but it was really, actually, no, that's right. It was, his BABIP was the same in both halves. So it really was, you can't point to bad ball luck there. It was really just a poor first half for him. But I think something that's really interesting is that his pull rate was significantly lower than some of the other guys I looked at. His first half pull rate was 46%, and his second half pull rate was 29%, which would be by far a career low for him. So I'm not necessarily saying he should do that in the future, but because he definitely should pull the ball. But I think the change in approach with all the fastballs he was seeing was, let the ball travel more, shorten up a little bit, be willing to take it the other way, because he has plenty of power. Like he can hit opposite field home runs. So I think that was kind of what the change he made. Because like we said, he has plenty of bat speed. He can afford to lose a few ticks, and still be plus. So I think that's kind of what the change he made, in the second half, which obviously worked out for him, because it was, I believe it was, he was negative against fastballs, negative batted run value in the first half, and he was not quite to his 23 level, in the second half, but it was pretty darn close. Yeah.
Yeah, and you mentioned Olsen's swing is kind of more of an uppercut, not really like a flat swing, so that makes it a little bit tougher to, deal with pitches at the top of the zone. Yeah, I'm kind of curious if, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but if, the fastball locations that he was seeing in 2024 were higher, like, more higher fastballs compared to the ones he was seeing in 2023, that could, explain, a few of these issues. But yeah, I think the graph that you provided in the article is pretty clear in the sense that like he's very much between 74, 75 in terms of his rolling 100 swings, bat speed. And then like basically after August, like that just drops down to like 73. And it gets back up to 74 by the end of the season, but like it does feel like there was a little bit of a, oh yeah, we're gonna reduce this just a tiny
A
bit.
line, yeah, you see that line hit, and then that's kind of a signal to where, oh, maybe he started to change things right around this point.
I am kind of curious if we've got spring training data on this. Obviously, it's incredibly small sample size. He probably swung like maybe what like 20, 30 times so far in spring. So it's hard to say if, that's a change that he's incorporating into his arsenal right now, or if he's, back up to being a, 90 percentile swing rate guy. But
Yeah, I've seen
that is.
some spring bat speed numbers roll out there on X and Twitter, but I'm not sure if it's 100% publicly available. But I
Sure.
have seen some of them out there.
All right. The next guy we're going to talk about here is Yiner Diaz, who, great, really great season for him last year. I think a lot of people were expecting good things from Yiner. Unfortunately, he also started the season really slowly.
Yeah, he did.
But then it's almost like a copy of the Matt Olson swing speed chart, where it's like it's pretty steady, and then mid-July hits, and then it drops just a tick. And so, yeah, what you mentioned some small changes with his mechanics in the article. Does it make sense to attribute the improvement we saw because of those changes in swing mechanics, or do you think there's something else there with Diaz?
Yeah, I do think there is a little bit of noise there. I do. I tried to, exclude some of the guys that we knew were dealing with injuries, in the first half, kind of for all we like for what's reported out there. Like for instance, with Machado, we knew he was dealing with the elbow early in the season. So obviously, he was gonna as the season went on, he felt better. His bat speed increased. So we kind of explained that away. No, there's always some guys that are dealing with, stuff that we just don't hear about. They're playing through stuff. So we can attribute that to some of these guys. We just don't know though. That's just pure speculation. But with Diaz, yeah, I feel like he's a super aggressive hitter. He has an obscene chase rate, a really high chase rate. He swings a lot. So I feel like it's just kind of, he's just going to be streaky by nature. And that's just going to lead to more volatile, outcomes. But his quality of contact did kind of tick up in the second half. Like his hard hit rate was 50%, which is up 5% from the first half. His barrel rate, well, not quite to the 2023 level of 12%, which is really, really good. He got back up to 9%. So it's just a rare ability for him as a catcher with that ability to make contact, hit for a high average, and still pop 20 plus home runs. I know he didn't quite get there last year, but he has that sort of upside.
Yeah, do you think he gets there this year?
I think so. Yeah, I think he should. I mean, I've no reason to, because he's gonna get all the playing time, all the similar playing time as last year. And yeah, I'm a believer in his profile, his power.
Yeah, I think you also kind of point out that even though he's squaring out the ball more, right, it does come with more strikeouts, but his strikeout numbers
Yeah.
are like fine. Right, they're
Yeah,
not. He's
exactly.
not like
Yeah.
a
Yeah.
30% guy, right? He's
Yeah.
more in the
Yeah.
20s or low
He makes
20s.
plenty of contact so he can concede, a little bit of contact for more power. Yeah.
All right, so we got two vets. And I want to talk about two young guys here, in Victor Robles and I guess Joe Adell's not really a young guy anymore, but
Yeah.
basically both sort of post-high prospects. Yeah, and I want to talk about Robles first, because I think he's really interesting in the fact that like he's doing well in Seattle, which like doesn't seem to make sense for any sort of hitters. Like, oh, you leave
Right.
Seattle and now you become a better batter.
Yeah.
So yeah, what happened with Robles going basically, I mean, like you mentioned in the other article, he goes from a bottom five hitter based on WRC plus to a guy who, in one half of the season has 154 WRC plus. Yeah, so what changed for Robles?
So it is fascinating because we've seen a lot of these stories about right-handed hitters specifically going to Seattle and just falling off a cliff. We that story about Teoscar Hernandez, how we just couldn't see the ball. So it's fascinating that Robles, found the secret in Seattle. But I think really just the biggest thing is he cut his strikeout rate by a lot. I mean, he was the biggest thing is around 18% strikeout rate for the season, which is really, really good for him, because he's not going to hit the ball hard. Like his hard hit rate was in the 20%, 27% last year. He's just not going to hit for a ton of power. I think he can tap into a little bit of power on the pull side. Like he's shown the willingness to do that. He's pulled the ball a decent amount throughout his career. But I mean, he made more contact in the zone. He made more contact overall. And so you can't really do both as a hitter. You can't not hit for power and not make contact. Then you're not in the league at that point, which is what he was getting close to. I mean, he got DFA'd by the Nationals, so he was bordering on that. But whatever, the Seattle coaching staff did, whatever adjustments he made, he definitely worked out for him. I know it was a little bit of fortune because his BABIP was super inflated. And I kind of pointed out that kind of cohort of hitters that him and Parker Meadows, who was also in the Reducers article, collection of hitters who they didn't take a ton of walks, didn't hit the ball hard, didn't barrel up the ball. Generally, that's not a good combination. Generally, that leads to below average outcomes. But those guys, they ran higher BABIPs and they had really good second halves. So.
Yeah, I think what's fascinating about Robles is that in the swing speed chart that you posted in the article, granted it's from mid-July to end of October, so it's only half a season of sample, but he drops from a 25th percentile swing speed to just like more or less like maybe 5%, right? Like he drops his swing speed all the way down, and yet we see improvement from him, which I think is super interesting. But when you saw that, kind of what was kind of going through your head on like trying to explain what was going on with Robles?
I don't know if I can really buy into it, because I think like maybe the contact strides are legitimate. It's just 1 year, but we maybe it is. Maybe he made some other swing tweak that we that's kind of harder, more subtle to notice. But he did shorten up. He did lower his bat speed, so maybe it was a more just an emphasis on swinging less hard and just optimizing, making contact, and putting the ball in play and see what happens, pretty much, because he has plenty of speed. So he will run higher BABIPs. So it's not totally lucky, but I think there is a good amount of fortune here. So
Yeah, I think one thing super interesting about his 2024 in comparison to 2023, although it's funny enough, the numbers kind of line up with how 2020 to 2022 are, is that his ground ball rate decreased by 10% going from 23 to 24, and he got the ball in the air more in 20 between 23 and 24, increasing line drive rate, increasing his fly ball rate. But then the funny thing is that those stats are kind of like exactly in line with how his 2020 to 2022 seasons are. So
Yeah, it's
it's like,
fascinating. It
yeah, you
really
try to
is.
like get something from it and you're like, I don't really know if there's
Yeah,
anything there.
because he's tried that approach before. He's tried, to spray line drives and, hit the ball for contact, and it just didn't work for him in the past. And he tried to hit for power after that 2019 season, and didn't work for him. But now it kind of is. We'll see.
I mean, do you think in terms of Robles and where he goes in fantasy drafts, obviously his ADP is like, way out there. Like no one's drafting this guy to be a top three outfielder. Well, I mean, his ADP is around 200, so maybe someone is. But like at this point, he's really a guy you're getting for maybe runs, stolen
Stolen
bases for
base
sure.
is the biggest thing,
Maybe some like, do you think this could lead to some
Sneaky
average
average.
improvement?
Yeah, I think it could be a decent, I'm not gonna say like a high batting average, but it could be, 250, 260, which is makes him pretty, that's a like a fairly rare combination, because it's not gonna be non-zero power. Like it's not gonna be, like it'll probably be around 10 to 15 ish. But if he can steal 30 bases, hit for 250 average, like that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it is key to remember, like, the big thing with Robles is his speed, right? It's why his BABIPs have consistently actually been really good, right? He has a career 311 BABIP, which is insane. And that the guy's played, he's been playing in the majors since
That's a
2017.
large enough sample to where we can believe that's what he is.
The guy's had 2,000 plate appearances. I think like that's like, oh yeah, maybe
Yeah,
this
we
is a
can
little
believe it.
real. In terms of average, like it is weird to think about Robles as like a legitimate like three category contributor at this stage in his career. But yeah, the runs maybe need to improve a little bit, and who knows how well that's going to work for him because that Seattle offense is
Yeah, we'll
not
see
that
what
good.
that offense looks like. Yeah, they didn't do anything to add to it really, and
No.
yeah, so it could be, could just be a two, could be, I mean, really just, could just be steals if the average, falls back a little bit, but there is possibility for that.
All right. One last guy we want to talk about who probably a lot of managers have been frustrated by is Joe Adell. Who very frustrating because the guy, I think the book on Adell is like this guy hits the ball incredibly hard, but does not do anything with it. 2024 actually like was a positive season for him in the fact that he got 20 homers and 15 steals. And that's like the high water mark for his career so far. Which obviously is a far cry from what a lot of people were hoping for what Adell could be. But yeah, so what small changes did you see in his swing mechanics that could provide maybe some hope for what 2025 could look like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a prime example of a guy that has, all the tools you could ever want. But the hit tool is the biggest thing that will hold these guys back. And that has for the majority of his career. And he showed improvement in that the hit tool in 2024. I mean, his swinging strike rate fell all the way down to 13.9%, which is the best it's ever been. He made more contact in the zone. He still maintained his quality of contact, which is, really good barrel rate, really good hard hit rate. He walked a little bit more too, so all good things. And he's, I mean, he actually had a pretty good defensive year as well, and he's primed to play center field now this year, so premium defensive spot. And then yeah, all the power and speed you could want, really. Like it's certainly, there's certainly a lot of upside here. Certainly, there's also no floor for average, probably. Like it was a really ugly 2015 season. It was like a 200 average, which is pretty ugly. But I mean, he did get pretty unlucky as far as the BABIP goes. It was career low for him, 244 compared to 281 for his career. So a little bit below the standard there. So if it could tick back up, could be like a 220, 230 average. That's maybe reasonable. But then, I mean, could hit for 25 home runs, 15 stolen bases. That's what he's projected for. biopsy, which is the one that I look at for him because that's the most rosy colored for him. I mean, I think it's certainly worth buying. I've been a big fan of Adele for a while, and now we've seen, some incremental steps to improve in that K rate. So if he can stick around that 28% mark, even around 30%, I think there's a little bit of upside here and worth buying into at his cost.
I think the frustrating thing about Adele, and you point this out in your article a little bit, like looking at his Seeger, which it was a stat that was created by
Robert Orr,
Robert Horry, yes, yeah, Baseball Prospectus. And then you look at also like, pitcherless metrics on like swing decision and strike zone judgment. This guy like knows the zone. And, like he makes good swing decisions. He's got great power, good speed, and for some reason, none of those things come together at exactly the same time.
That's right. Are we trying Frankenstein all these guys together, put together their best season in this category, best season in this category, try to mush it all together, but it never quite works out that way.
Yeah, it feels like with Adele, a lot of it just needs to click, right? It's like this guy's probably ha he probably has an incredible ceiling, but like you said, the floor is just not there.
The floor is bottomed out by, the hit tool. So
And I mean, and I think that that's what makes him, frustrating for definitely, weekly and daily leagues. If you're like, head-to-head categories or something like that, maybe it kind of balances itself out in a roto league because you know what you're going to get with Adele at the end of the day. But yeah, I mean, just looking at his process plus, like this guy went from, a rolling like one, he almost got up to 120 process plus in like July or June, dropped down to 90, and then he ended up finishing the season right around 100, which is like,
Yeah, he's just gonna be streaky, peaks and valleys for this guy.
Exactly. It's
Absolutely.
it is pretty frustrating.
No
But it
doubt.
is notable that, the swing speed like you're mentioning here, right? He went from it was only a 0.3 mile per hour decrease. But because he has such a high swing speed, right? Like those incremental subtractions in swing speed ultimately don't actually hurt his ability to power the ball.
And he shortened up just a little bit, made that slight tweak to his stance, how he had, higher leg kick in the first half, and then kind of went to a little toe tap, a little more controlled in the second half. And that, he had a 25% strikeout rate in the second half, which is, a big step forward for him. So if he can, like we said, kind of put the pieces together, certainly you kind of have to, be mindful of the builds you have him with, because the average could be like pr really poor, could be 200 level, which he did last year. So if you can kind of mush him together with another high average guy, kind of a boring average guy, won't hit for many homers, won't, like a Colt Keith kind of, kind of makes sense. That's one of the guys I paired him with in the DGFBI. So he's gonna hit for 270-ish average, and then balanced out by Adele, who could hit for 210 or something like that.
Yeah, the good thing for Adele, like you mentioned, is that he basically has no competition. No one's
Right.
pushing him for that center field spot. The only other player on that team is Mickey Moniak, and
I think we've seen what Mickey Moniak
we know what he's got, and it's the
is.
ceiling is nowhere near Adele's. The floor is about the same. So
That's a good way to put it.
Hopefully the Angels also see that as well, but we'll see how
Let's
that
hope
works out.
so.
All right, so that wraps it up for the Bat Speed Reducers article. Like you mentioned, you also wrote about Parker Meadows here, another guy who I think has a lot of interesting hype around him. Hopefully, he can hold on to a job in Detroit. I like,
I think he's banked up right now too, so hopefully it's healthy.
it's kind of unfortunate. Like that team is dealing with some stuff. I think Matt Vierling is also out, and so.
They are,
Now, as a Twins fan, I don't mind this, but in terms of the general, like fantasy landscape, it is unfortunate that they're dealing with these injuries because that is a young team that has a lot of interesting promise with it. So, but yeah, definitely check that out. Obviously, in terms of the podcast format, we don't have any fun graphs or tables here, so definitely check out Kyle's articles because they're chock full of good graphics, good tables, just kind of help explain what's going on here. With these, with swing speed and just in general with a bunch of these metrics that we're talking about. So, yeah, before we let you go, Kyle, yeah, just kind of let let the people know? How can they, you know, follow you on social media, or if you've got any articles that are coming out on PitchList soon, or just, you know, anywhere else, feel free to share what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm over on X at KyleBaseball7, and don't have any articles planned right now, but definitely will have something planned in the future, and we'll be posting about it. So,
all right, sounds good. Yeah, hopefully, the Nationals do something good this year, because I feel like they've been a sneaky pick for a lot of people. Like, kind of they're not really a dark horse in how many people are like picking them to be the number seven team in the wild card.
I mean, their pitching like was like on paper, like they didn't have any guys last year, but you know, they overperformed, and you know, maybe they made some change to the coaching staff, so maybe, you know, they can do that again. We'll see.
Yeah, I'll just say the DJ Hirsch hype is real. I don't know if I believe it.
But I don't know if I believe it either. There's a lot of hype around DJ Hirsch. I'm not sure if I'm a believer either. But we'll see.
Yeah, I have him on my dynasty team, and it was like he went from like a guy I was just gonna drop to be like, maybe I'm gonna hold on to Hirsch just a little bit longer and see what happens.
At least maybe a streamer. Maybe that's maybe what he can be. Yeah,
exactly.
Maybe more.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Again, you can find us at This Week PL on Twitter. Send us your comments and questions at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at TheJohnKuh. And if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the PitchList podcast feed, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you listen to your podcast. Leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. And lastly, sign up for PitchList Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the PitchList Discord. Obviously, we are talking a lot of baseball right now in the Discord. It is popping off. So definitely head over there if you just need some advice on drafts, because I know we're full into draft season. Opening day is technically next week with the Cubs and the Dodgers, although if you really ask me, the real opening day is in 2 weeks. So, baseball season is ramping up. So definitely check out the Discord for all your baseball needs. But yeah, that's going to be it for this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Kyle, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.